A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
3 days after launching a commercial AI model, the U.S. government suspended it. Not for what it said, for what it could do. The model was Claude Fable 5, Anthropic's first publicly released Mythos class model, and the suspension kicked off a 3-week scramble that ended with export controls lifted and a whole lot of unanswered questions. Daniel's been watching this unfold, and he's confused. Honestly, so are most people. He wants to know what Fable actually is, how it relates to Mythos, and what Mythos class even means. And he's asking us to trace the bigger thread. What does it mean when capability class becomes a regulatory category?
The Fable. Mythos confusion is everywhere. I've seen developers in forums assuming they're the same model under different names. People treating Mythos class like it's a trim level on a car. You know, the Fable edition with the Mythos package. It's not that.
So let's start with the question everyone's asking. Is Fable just Mythos under a different name?
It's not. Anthropic has been explicit about this. Fable is Mythos class, but it isn't Mythos. The two were announced together on June 9th, same blog post, same day. Fable got pricing, API access, the whole public rollout. Mythos 5 was announced simultaneously, but with no pricing, no public API details, no launch date. They're distinct products.
Which is where the confusion starts, because Mythos class sure sounds like it means a Mythos model. If I buy something described as Mercedes class, I expect a Mercedes.
Right, and the public documentation doesn't help. Anthropic has never formally defined what Mythos class denotes. Is it a capability threshold, a safety tier, an internal architecture family, a marketing frame? The launch announcement uses the term, the Glasswing documentation references it, but nobody at Anthropic has put a definition on the record. That's a deliberate ambiguity, and we should say so plainly.
Deliberate ambiguity is the polite term for it. The less polite term is, they're asking us to trust a category they won't define. And it's not like there's no precedent for this kind of labeling. Think about how Nvidia uses Titan class versus RTX. There's a loose implication of tier, but you can actually look up what differentiates them architecturally. Here, we don't even get that.
That's exactly the gap. With GPU tiers, you can point to CUDA core counts, memory bandwidth, tensor core generations. With Mythos class, we don't have an equivalent spec sheet. And I think that's partly because the metrics we'd need don't really exist yet. How do you quantify long horizon planning capability in a single number? You can't just say it scores X on this benchmark, because the whole point of agentic models is that they operate across time and across tasks in ways that single-shot evals don't capture. A very carefully managed vibe. But let me ground what we do know. Fable 5 was billed as a model built for long-horizon agentic work, running for days, planning across stages, delegating to sub-agents, checking its own work. Priced at $10 per million input tokens and $50 per million output tokens. The use case is an AI that doesn't just answer a question and disappear. It spins up, makes a plan, executes across multiple steps, maybe calls other models or tools, and keeps going.
So it's not a chatbot. It's a worker.
That's the pitch. And the Glasswing documentation. Glasswing is the CLI tooling for this, describes tight sandboxing. Isolated execution environments for any code the model runs, restricted file system access, network call gating. If you're going to let a model run for days and make its own decisions about what to execute, you need containment boundaries. The sandboxing language is about runtime isolation, not about capping the model's intelligence.
Which makes sense. If I hire a contractor and give them a laptop, I still don't give them the keys to the building.
Exactly the analogy. And to extend it, if that contractor is going to be working in my office for a week, I might also put them in a room with no network jack, give them a local machine that can't reach the production database, and have someone check their work at the end of each day. That's essentially the Glasswing model. The model gets a workspace, but the workspace has walls.
and the walls are structural, not advisory. It's not the model choosing to stay in bounds. It's physically incapable of reaching outside the sandbox.
Right, and that distinction matters enormously for the regulatory story, which we'll get to. Now, here's where the fable-mythos relationship gets genuinely murky. Anthropic hasn't publicly confirmed whether fable and mythos share weights, whether fable is distilled from mythos, or whether they're architecturally distinct. The public documentation is silent on all three. And this isn't like the sonnet-opus relationship. Those share an architecture and differ in scale within a known family. We know how sonnet relates to opus. With fable and mythos, we don't know.
So the honest answer to Daniel's core question, are they the same model, is we don't know, and Anthropic hasn't said.
We know they're not the same product. We don't know if they're the same model with different safety gating, or a distillation, or a separate architecture entirely. The community has inferred a lot. Journalists have reported a lot. But the primary sources are silent.
That silence is itself interesting. Anthropic is normally pretty forthcoming about model relationships. They've published system cards, they've done lengthy technical reports. Here, they drew a line and said, mythos class, and stopped.
And I think there's a reason for that silence that goes beyond marketing. If fable is a distilled version of mythos, then saying so tells the world something about mythos's capabilities. If fable is mythos with safety layers bolted on, that tells the world something about what mythos can do without those layers. Either way, describing the relationship gives information about an unreleased model that Anthropic clearly wants to keep controlled.
Which is itself a kind of information hazard. The description of the relationship is sensitive because it leaks capability signals about the thing they haven't released.
And that brings us to the fallback safeguard, which I think is the most under-discussed part of this whole launch. Fable 5 launched with a mechanism that's novel. If you prompt it on topics touching cybersecurity, biology, chemistry, or health, your query doesn't get refused, it gets silently routed to Claude Opus 4.
Wait, silently?
The user isn't notified. You think you're talking to Fable, you're not.
So if I ask Fable to design a novel synthetic biology pathway, I get an answer. Just not from Fable.
Correct. And the design choice here's significant. A refusal signals that the topic is dangerous. It creates what safety researchers sometimes call the forbidden knowledge dynamic. The model says, I can't help with that, and the user immediately knows they've hit something sensitive. It's a signal. The fallback routing eliminates that signal. You get an answer from a less capable model, and you may never know the switch happened.
There's something almost, I don't know if deceptive is the right word, but it's certainly not transparent.
It's strategic opacity. Anthropic's argument, I suspect, is that transparency about dangerous topics is counterproductive. You don't want to put up a sign that says, ask here for sensitive information. But it also means users can't trust that they're talking to the model they selected. On cybersecurity, biology, chemistry, and health, you're getting Opus 4.8 full stop.
And Opus 48 is no slouch. It's their previous flagship. But it's not Fable.
It's not Fable. And for the agentic use case, Fable is designed for running multi-day workflows, delegating to sub-agents. That capability gap could matter a lot. Imagine you've built a workflow that depends on Fable's reasoning depth, and halfway through it hits a biology adjacent step, and suddenly you're on Opus.
The workflow doesn't break. It just quietly degrades.
And you might not notice until the output is wrong.
That's a real trust problem, not just for users, for developers building on this.
Which is why I think the fallback mechanism is partly about regulatory positioning. And that's where the timeline gets wild.
Let's do the timeline. June 9th launch.
June 9th, Fable 5 and Mythos 5 announced. Fable available, Mythos announced, but not released. June 12th, 3 days later, the U.S. Department of Commerce invokes Export Control Authority requiring a BIS license for any foreign national to access either model.
3 days? That's not a review cycle. That's an emergency break.
And it didn't just cover external users. It covered Anthropic's own foreign national employees. The company literally couldn't let its own staff access the models without a license.
Which is insane. You build the thing, and then the government tells you your own engineers can't look at it.
Unable to screen reliably by nationality, and how would you, at scale, in 3 days? Anthropic disabled both models globally. June 12th, Fable goes dark. Mythos, which hadn't even launched yet, goes dark too.
What was the stated reason?
The reporting ties the order to a jailbreak that could turn the models into unrestricted cyber tools. Amazon researchers are credited in some accounts with identifying the bypass. They found a way to strip the safeguards and get the model to operate as an offensive cyber weapon.
So the concern wasn't, this model might say bad things. It was this model might do bad things autonomously.
That's the shift. This wasn't a content moderation action, it was a capability action. The government looked at what the model could do, not what it might say, and pulled the emergency brake.
And then reversed within 3 weeks.
June 27th, Commerce permits partial return. June 30th, export controls fully lifted following BIS review. 3 weeks from emergency suspension to full clearance.
That speed cuts both ways. Either the threat was overblown and the initial suspension was premature, or the review process is still calibrating, and 3 weeks was enough to decide this particular model didn't cross the real red line.
I think it's the latter. The BIS, Bureau of Industry and Security, has existing frameworks for export controls on dual-use technology. They know how to evaluate semiconductor fabrication equipment. They know how to evaluate encryption software. They don't have a mature framework for evaluating general-purpose AI models. This was them building the plane while flying it.
And the plane landed in 3 weeks, which is fast for a government process and terrifyingly slow for a company that just had its flagship product yanked off the market.
The precedent here's enormous. This is the first time export controls have been applied to a general-purpose AI model post-launch. Not to hardware, not to training data or chips. To the model itself, to the weights, the inference endpoint, the thing users actually interact with.
Compare that to ASML, the Dutch company that makes chip fabrication equipment. The US has spent years negotiating export controls on their machines to China. But those are physical objects. They ship in crates. You can track them. Model weights are... not that.
Model weights are a file. They can be copied, exfiltrated, hosted anywhere. The export control mechanism designed for physical dual-use goods doesn't map cleanly onto software, let alone AI models. And yet the Commerce Department reached for that tool anyway, because it was the only one they had.
Which tells us the regulatory toolkit is lagging badly behind the technology. They're using a hammer from the 1970s on a problem from 2026.
And the hammer worked, sort of. Anthropic complied immediately, but the fact that the controls were lifted 3 weeks later suggests the initial assessment may have been reactive rather than methodical. A jailbreak was discovered, someone at Commerce got briefed, and the order went out before anyone had time to do a proper threat assessment.
What do we know about the jailbreak itself?
The reporting is thin on technical details, and that's probably intentional. If you describe the bypass publicly, you're giving people a roadmap. What we know is that Amazon researchers identified a method to turn the models into unrestricted cyber tools. Unrestricted is the key word. The concern was about removing all safeguards, not just about the model's baseline capabilities.
So the model with safeguards is fine. The model without safeguards is a cyber weapon. And someone proved you could strip the safeguards.
That's the chain of reasoning. And it raises an uncomfortable question: if the safeguards can be stripped by researchers in a lab, what happens when the model weights eventually leak? Because model weights always leak eventually.
They do.
It's not a question of if, it's when and how widely. Every major model release eventually has its weights circulating in places they shouldn't be. The difference here's the stakes. If Fable without safeguards is dangerous, then weight security isn't just an IP issue, it's a national security issue.
That's a terrifying escalation. We've spent years treating model weight leaks as a piracy problem. Someone torrented Llama. Someone put it on Hugging Face without permission. Annoying for the company, but the conversation was always about licensing and revenue. What you're describing is a world where a weight leak is functionally equivalent to a weapon system going missing.
That's the logical endpoint of capability-based regulation. If the government says this model without safeguards is a national security threat, then every copy of those weights is a threat, and weights are infinitely copyable. You can't put them back in the box.
Which loops back to the fallback safeguard. If Anthropic knew this model was going to attract regulatory scrutiny...
They had to know. They built a safety mechanism that doesn't just refuse dangerous queries, it silently downgrades the model. That's not a feature you build at the last minute. That's architecture designed with regulatory defense in mind.
We can't be a cyber weapon if we automatically switch to a weaker model whenever someone asks about chemistry.
It's a compelling argument to a regulator. The model physically can't answer dangerous queries at full capability. It routes them to a safer system. That's a design choice that anticipates exactly the kind of intervention that happened 3 days after launch.
Did it help?
We don't know. The BIS review took 3 weeks. We don't know what evidence Anthropic submitted, what testing BIS did, or whether the fallback mechanism factored into the decision to lift controls, but I'd bet it was part of the conversation.
So where does that leave the industry? If capability class is now a regulatory trigger, what do other labs do?
Two paths. One, stay below the threshold. Don't build anything that might trigger an export control review. That means capping capability, which is hard to do precisely and commercially disastrous if your competitors don't.
And the other path?
Build in explicit safety mechanisms that preempt intervention. The fallback routing is one example. Sandboxing is another. If your model runs in a contained environment where it can't touch the file system or make arbitrary network calls, the argument that it's a cyber weapon gets weaker. Expect every major lab to be designing their next release with a regulatory story already prepared.
The safety mechanisms become part of the product, not just because they're good practice, but because they're regulatory insurance.
And that's not necessarily bad. If the regulatory pressure drives better safety engineering, that's a net positive. The risk is that it drives safety theater. Mechanisms that look good in a regulatory filing but don't actually constrain a determined adversary.
The fallback safeguard is interesting on that front. It constrains the model on sensitive topics, but it also hides the constraint from the user. Is that safety engineering or safety theater?
It's both. It's a real technical control. You literally can't get fable-level responses on those topics. But the opacity means users can't verify they're getting what they paid for. And for developers building agentic workflows, that opacity could cause failures that are hard to debug.
Because you don't know when the switch happened.
You don't even know the switch exists unless you've read the documentation carefully. Most users haven't.
And this is where I think the trust problem compounds. If I'm a developer and I discover my workflow was silently degraded for 3 days before I caught the error, my response isn't just, I need to fix my pipeline. It's what else is happening silently that I don't know about. One hidden mechanism poisons trust in the entire system.
That's the corrosive effect of opacity, even if the fallback routing is perfectly justified on safety grounds, and I think there's a real argument that it is. The fact that it's hidden means users start questioning everything. Is this really Fable? Is this really the model I selected? What other switches are happening that I can't see?
The answer right now is you can't know. The only verification mechanism is to avoid those four domains entirely, which, for a lot of legitimate use cases, is impractical. Drug discovery researchers work in biology and chemistry by definition. Security researchers work in cybersecurity. You're telling them they can't use the most capable model on the market for their actual work.
Or they can use it, but they're getting Opus, and they should price and plan accordingly. But that raises a fairness question. Are they paying Fable pricing for Opus responses? The pricing page doesn't carve out an exception for fallback routed queries.
That's a billing transparency issue that I suspect someone's legal team is going to have opinions about. But that's a whole other episode. Let me pull us back to Daniel's original question, because we've covered a lot of ground. What actually is Fable 5? It's a long-horizon agentic model, first of the Mythos class, with a novel fallback safeguard that silently routes sensitive queries to Opus 4. It isn't Mythos, it's a distinct product in the category whose definition Anthropic hasn't made public. Whether it shares weights with Mythos, is distilled from it, or is architecturally separate, is unknown.
That's the cleanest summary I've heard. And the export control episode is the thing that transforms this from a product launch into a regulatory watershed.
Where does that leave us? Three takeaways, for three different audiences.
For users, when you see Mythos class in your tooling, treat it as a capability tier, not a model name. Fable isn't Mythos. And if you're working on anything touching cybersecurity, biology, chemistry, or health, you aren't talking to Fable. You're talking to Opus 48. The model you select isn't necessarily the model you get.
For developers, the sandboxing in Fable CLI isn't optional decoration. It's structural. design your workflows assuming containment boundaries, isolated execution environments, restricted file system access, network core gating. If your agentic workflow needs to touch the open internet or write to arbitrary paths, you need to plan for that up front, because the default is locked down.
For the industry, the June 2026 export control episode is a watershed. Capability-based regulation is no longer theoretical. A U.S. government agency suspended a commercial AI product 3 days after launch on national security grounds. The grounds weren't about what the model said. They were about what it could do. Labs should expect that crossing certain thresholds invites government scrutiny, and the design of safeguards may become part of the regulatory conversation whether they like it or not.
The reversal was fast. 3 weeks. But that speed cuts both ways. It suggests the regulatory machinery is still calibrating. The next suspension might not be 3 weeks. It might be 3 months, or indefinite.
That's the open question I keep coming back to. The BIS review process is clearly still figuring out how to evaluate these models. The Fable suspension was their first real test. It won't be their last. The question is whether the next one triggers a longer freeze, and whether the labs can design around that uncertainty.
There's a scenario here that keeps me up. What happens when a model gets suspended and the review doesn't resolve in 3 weeks? What if the next jailbreak is harder to assess, or the capability in question is more ambiguous? A company could ship a product, have it yanked on day 3, and still be waiting for a ruling 6 months later. That's not a regulatory hiccup. That's an existential threat to the business model of releasing frontier models.
That uncertainty itself becomes a factor in development decisions. Do you invest hundreds of millions in training a model that might get frozen on launch day? Do you build safety mechanisms that satisfy a regulator whose criteria you can't predict? The Fable episode gave us a best-case timeline, 3 weeks from suspension to clearance, but it didn't give us a guarantee that the next one will be that fast. It gave us a lower bound, not an upper bound.
The Fable, Mythos Confusion, is a symptom of a deeper shift. We're entering an era where what a model can do matters more than what it says, and regulators are starting to act on that distinction. The export control suspension of June 2026 is the first data point, not the last.
If the fallback safeguard silently switches me to Opus without telling me, how do I know I'm not getting a worse answer on something that matters?
You don't. That's the trade-off.
Unless Anthropic adds transparency, a model version indicator in the response, or at minimum clear documentation about which topics trigger the switch. Right now, the only way to know is to stay away from those four domains entirely. If your work touches biology, chemistry, health, or cybersecurity, assume you're getting Opus.
I'd add, if you're building anything where the answer quality actually matters, medical research, security auditing, anything safety critical, you need to treat that opacity as a risk factor in your system design. Don't build a pipeline that silently depends on Fable-level reasoning if a portion of your queries might get Opus-level responses without you knowing.
That's the practical takeaway. Document your assumptions about which model is actually handling which queries. If you can't verify it, don't depend on it.
Thanks, Hilbert. Good question.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumentop, for keeping us honest.
If you want more episodes, we're at myweirdprompts.com. Send us your questions at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.